Session number 893.
Colonel Draffenreel One, could you tell me a little bit about your family and educational background? I'm interested in how you got into the army and therefore from whence you came.
My own family. Well, not a great army family, but my father was what they termed a militiaman in the old days, which was like a sort of yeoman, which would have gone back to before the Boer War, you see. My grandfather was a Royal Marine. But apart from that, nothing very much, really.
In your schooling, did you choose a school with a view to one which could prepare you for an army career?
No, my father actually chose for me to go to Eton because he was very friendly with a particular housemaster there. However, before I was due to go there, the housemaster died, and so he was against me going there at all, and I went to Uppingham.
Yes.
Which was, in those days, was quite a sort of popular army school. Uppingham, Wellington was the chief, I suppose, army school, but Uppingham was quite a popular one.
Yes, there was a big army class at Uppingham.
And there were three army classes at Uppingham.
I see. Good. Now, you were commissioned at the end of 1918, and at Sandhurst, the period before that. I'm interested why you chose to go into a cavalry regiment. Why did the cavalry attract you?
Well, only because as a young boy, I used to be very fond of horses, and I used to, even in my early school day time, go and stay with an uncle who had a pack of hounds up in the north of England, in Cumberland actually, and I was always keen to go out hunting whenever I had a chance, and that gave me the sort of urge, I think.
It sounds like mainly sporting reasons.
Well, indeed.
No more serious professional interests?
No, because by the fact of going into a cavalry regiment, you had great advantages apart from your soldiering efforts. You did have a lot of perks, as you might say, by having horses to ride and do not only soldiering work, but recreation as well.
What kind of things?
Hunting and polo. Especially if you were in India, and in England too.
Yes. Now, why did you choose the bays?
I chose the bays, I'm reiterating what I told you last time, because entirely due, I think, really, because I chose a regiment that wasn't considered a very rich regiment, and two, where we lived in Norfolk in those days. My father had a great friend, his name was Harmon, actually. And his brother was colonel of the bays at that time. And he said, I'll see my brother and see whether he'd consider taking you into the regiment.
What do you mean the bays wasn't a very rich regiment?
Well, some regiments, some cavalry regiments I'm talking about, I don't know about other regiments, but some cavalry regiments were noted for being rich regiments, having a lot of rich young men. The Bays was not a bit like that.
Why did that influence your choice?
Because I wasn't a rich man. In fact, I had great difficulty, as I said, when I came back from India, you could live in India fairly cheaply. And I was lucky enough, directly I left Sandhurst, to go out to India. But when I came back again, I soon found that living in England was, well, above my financial state.
Why was it so costly to be in a cavalry regiment?
Well, if you'd chosen a cavalry regiment, you were supposed to do what you was expected of you, namely to have horses and that sort of thing, and perhaps play polo. Most of us played polo, or hunted, one or the other, and that was not cheap, although it was cheaper in those days than it is today.
Was there anything else other than keeping horses that was also costly?
Well, the uniform, of course, was costly. The cavalry uniform, well, there, you've got to look at it there in front of you, was a very rich and glamorous uniform, really. Mm-hmm. Full dress and that sort of thing. More so than most, other than perhaps the guards.
Could you give me any idea how the different cavalry regiments, what the different levels of cost were in the different cavalry regiments? How much money are we actually talking about?
Well, I wouldn't like to say that. I'm sorry, because I might be saying something that was quite wrong to start off with.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's put it another way. Can you give me any idea of the differences of the standard of living, if you like, between some cavalry regiments and others? Why were some so much more expensive?
Well, only because they were known throughout the young people coming out of Sandhurst. They knew that certain regiments were expected to have, and when you were interviewed by the colonel of the regiment, he probably asked you how much money you expected to have. And if you said you only had 100 a year or something like that, he might even, I won't say he would, but he might even say that that wouldn't give you a sufficient amount of money to enjoy yourself in my regiment.
You couldn't afford to belong.
And so you couldn't... that's putting it rather bluntly, but that was a sort of feeling.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very interesting.
But I wouldn't like to say earmark any one particular regiment, one, because I might be wrong to it. If this was ever published or got out, it would be put against me, I think.
I'm sure that I'm sure there are records of the costs. Regimental records probably already contain this information. Anyway.
Well, there might be. I don't know. But if you're going to see other cavalry officers, which you will do,
did you ever seriously consider any other arm than the cavalry arm?
Not in the army, no.
Okay.
I had thought about the navy, but.
Now, 1918-19, you were on regimental duties with the Beys in Germany, and then you spent a short period in York prior to going to Aleppo. When the regiment was posted to Aleppo, was there any particular reason why it went there?
Well, because of the disturbances in that part of the world, which exists today still, there were, as I say, quite a number of, not so many English regiments, but there were two cavalry regiments and some Indian cavalry regiments and infantry, as far as I remember, at Aleppo.
Yes, but
trying to keep the peace between the Syrians, French, and Armenians.
Mm-hmm. What kind of employ did that lead to for the Beys?
Well, nothing very great other than having guards occasionally in the local town, and also I think just the fact that there were soldiers riding about and, you know, being conspicuous.
Showing the flag.
Showing the flag, in other words, yeah.
Did you have any civilian riot control duties or anything like
that? No. Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yes. How well trained and equipped were the bays for carrying out this kind of role?
Well, not particularly in those early years, because after the First War, most of those chaps that had been through the First War were due for demobilisation. Other ranks joining the army in those days, their terms of service were what they called 7 and 5. That was 7 active service with the regiment and 5 on the reserve. And so as the war had been on for whatever it was, 5 years, a very large percentage of the chaps in the regiment then, of course, were due for demobilisation, which happened at York.
With a large number of relatively new recruits in the regiment, did you at Aleppo spend very much time in beginning their training?
Yes.
And beginning your training as well?
Indeed, entirely.
Could you tell me in a little detail, in as much detail as you could remember, about the kind of training program you were put through during this period at Aleppo?
You will appreciate it is 60 years ago.
Do your best.
But as far as I remember, we weren't in the barracks, we were under canvas the whole of this time. And so all our work, whatever it was...
Begin at the training again, please.
What I said, we were under canvas and not in barracks or anything like that, so there was nothing there that was laid out in the normal way of a barracks in England or India. And so we had to make our own work programmes, really, which consisted chiefly, as far as I can remember, was drill and musketry, which was fairly easy, and riding school, because a lot of these chaps had, having just joined the army, probably a lot of them had never ridden before in their life. Mm-hmm. It was quite easily, although we didn't have any covered or indoor riding schools. Aleppo, by and large, was a fine weather place. Mm-hmm. And so you could make your manages or whatever it was outside on the... It was mostly sand, that sort of thing.
Can you tell me a little more about riding school? What kind of drills and exercises were you taken through?
In riding school?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the very simplest, you know, sort of a class of 10 chaps. There were still a number of wartime officers who were qualified instructors, because they'd been in the army for pre-war, mm-hmm. who were capable of being able to take young recruits in the simplest form of riding school.
Yes. What was that form?
Well, it was really teaching them how to sit on a horse and how to trot and how to canter and how to turn the horse to the left and right and what have you. Nothing very complicated.
I see, a very basic form of training.
Very basic.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Presumably individual training advanced beyond this preliminary level that you experienced at Aleppo.
I don't think, as far as I remember, anything further than in the riding school. No outdoor, what I call field training. Mm. I mean, there might have been one simple exercise during the year, but that was about all.
at the end of 1919, you went to India, initially to Bangalore.
That's right.
And I wonder if here you can detail for me the sort of annual training program for cavalry regiments in India, building up a picture of the annual routine, starting from the individual training and building up to the larger units.
Yes, of course, Bangalore was a recognized pre-war cavalry station. So it had all the necessary, I would say equipment, that's not the right word, but it had riding schools, and it had covered rooms with all the things that were necessary for the initial training of young recruits, really. And it had ranges, of course, of every kind. And it was what you call a peacetime station, really.
And the training presumably began at the beginning of the year and progressed throughout.
That's right.
In various stages.
And it never got very advanced when you think that it was only a year or 18 months after the 1914-18 mm-hmm. war. Mm-hmm. It was all very sort of simple.
Yes. Can we try and build this up in a little more detail? Did you begin with troop training, or before that was there a great deal of individual
training? There was individual training. Individual training. And I suppose, as I say, it's too long ago, but I suppose there was troop training. I can't remember very much about it, but I think there was troop training. There must have been. And possibly before we left Bangalore, it got as advanced as squadron training, but there weren't, as far as I remember, anything like... Well, there was squadron training, that's right, because we had to send a squadron down to the Malabar Rebellion, so they must have known a certain amount.
What were the essential differences in the training program from between troop training and squadron training?
Well, troop training was almost entirely concentrated in barracks or round, very close to barracks. When you got to squadron training or regimental training, then you went afield, farther afield, and perhaps you like did in peacetime here, perhaps fought one squadron against another or got infantry to work with you.
The typical squadron training, what kind of exercises and drills would it involve? Can you detail them a bit?
I can give knowledge on that very much. I really can't remember. I mean, it was all very simple. It was nothing very complicated. Because half the chaps had only just learnt to ride, so it was done in the most simple way. A lot of it probably on roads rather than out in the fields, learning how to work a patrol up a road and that sort of thing. That's as far as I can remember.
What was the point of the training? That is to say, what kind of roles were you being trained for?
What do you mean by roles?
What kind of functions, what kind of tasks, what kind of... what was the sort of military philosophy behind the training?
Cavalry regiments... are in the army chiefly for reconnaissance purposes. That was their chief role. Mm-hmm. And that's why they were mounted on horses, so as to be able to get about the country quicker than the infantry. That's the only role I can really describe it as.
Mm-hmm. So you weren't being trained for the breakthrough, the charge, this kind
of thing? Oh, no, nothing like that. Mm. No. No.
Did the training... was it a training for the kind of environment in which you found yourself as compared with a training which would be applicable no matter what theatre you were working in? Was it related to the job of the British Army in India, or was it a general training that would be relevant no matter where you were?
Well, the training in India wouldn't be any different to what it would be in England. Except the country. Mm-hmm. It was much more open, of course, than what it's like training in England, where it's almost those towns entirely road in India. Of course, it was the wide open spaces, as you might say.
Yes. I was wondering if you were able to distinguish between training of the cavalry for an imperial policing sort of role that you would have in India as compared with training for a major war which, say, you might have in Europe?
Well, I don't think, from a cavalry point of view, in those early days, thinking about a major war didn't really enter our heads, certainly not into the junior ranks of myself, or even the more senior ones, may have entered the heads of the high up people, but we were thinking really of enjoying ourselves.
You said last time we talked that Bangalore was a very social place.
Well, it was.
What did you mean by that?
Well, it's India, if you've never been to India, probably. It's a very hot place, by and large, but not Bangalore. Bangalore was the much more the English climate, and so there were clubs and tennis parties and those sort of things, which you didn't get when you went up north. Really, up north it was much more of what one termed in those days proper India, really. And you got up at 4 o'clock in the morning because that was the only time that it was more or less cool, and worked up till 7 in the morning, and then very often you had to go to bed for a lot of time. By Bangalore it was just the same as it would be living in England. And of course there were all sorts of functions like cocktail parties and dances and that sort of thing, which were rather didn't take place much when you were up in the north, mm-hmm. really, or in the south.
You were selected whilst you were at Bangalore for training at Sangor Cavalry School.
Sauger, S-A-U.
S-A-U-G-O-R. Thank you. And you described that as a plum posting. What did you mean by that?
Well, any young officer who was selected to go to the cavalry school, it was one of the things we all wanted to do, because, one, you learned all the tricks and the trades of how to ride and that sort of thing, had all the best instructors, and were so educated that when you came back to your regiment, as happened to me, you generally became the equitation officer, which meant that you had to take all the new recruits and work out the programs for the riding school and all that sort of thing.
Could you recount for me some of your experiences at Sogor when you learnt the tricks of the trade, as you call them?
In what way do you mean?
Well, as it was, I understand the sort of the high point of a cavalry officer's training. I'm interested in what kind of exercises and training programs and drills you went through there.
Well, it was almost entirely 80% of riding and nothing else, either as someday there were classes of say 8 or 10 people, and one of you was perhaps picked out to take the ride, and your instructor would criticize as to how you were doing it or what you were doing wrong, that sort of thing.
What do you mean, take the ride?
Well, teach them what they've got to do. I mean, each ride of 8 people, I forget how many there were at the cavalry school, I could look it up, had what they call a ride instructor. And you spent your life while you were there under his jurisdiction, in one way or another, mostly in the riding school or outside. But as time went on and you, he thought you were proficient enough to take the ride, then he would stand down and watch, and you would do what you've been taught to do under him.
Could you explain to me how the riding school work differed from that which you would have already had with the regiment?
Oh, much more concentrated. I mean, in the regiment, once you'd... everybody had to... Every young officer joining the regiment had to go into the riding school and be passed out by the colonel. Mm. But after you'd done that, then you didn't go and do any more riding school work other than what you wanted to do yourself. While at the cavalry school, you did it every day.
I'm learning that you did an awful lot of riding.
Yeah.
At Sogor.
And instructing.
And instructing, but I'm not learning anything about what kind of riding you were doing.
Well, I don't know how much you know about riding.
Nothing at all, which is why I'm interested to hear what the cavalry drills of the time were.
Well, unless you had an inkling about it, it wouldn't convey very much. I mean, it would just go around in circles in the riding school, turning to the right and turning to the left and turning in circles and turning on the hocks, etc. And then you had all your jumping exercises where you had to learn to jump without stirrups, without reins, and taking off your coat as you were going off over the jumps, all those sort of things.
And did you do peg sticking and things like that?
Well, that was a recreation. Peg sticking and polo, we obviously did a lot of because it was a place where it was situated for that purpose.
Was there any sword and lance work at Sogor?
There was. There was indeed.
What form did the lance work take?
Well, it was. It was only of any use to lancer officers. It was no use to me, or any of my branch of the cavalry, because we didn't have lances. We did do a bit because there were competitions called tent pegging and that sort of thing, so you had to know how to hold a lance, but apart from that you didn't do much spearing of dummies or anything like that, which you would do with a sword.
What's tent pegging?
Well, it's a competition that everybody had in their regimental sports. You put a little peg in the ground, a wooden peg, smaller than this, firmly fixed in the ground, and you got on your horse 100 yards back, and then you galloped this peg with your sword, and according if you speared it and could carry it, then that deserved a certain number of points.